This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to come over the next hour. Coming up, we'll be focusing on Blackburn, Luton and Stoke this afternoon, wondering how Tony Mowbray is going to deal with the defensive injury crisis at Rovers. Is Luton's new stadium plans, are they going to go ahead? A 23,000-seater stadium seemingly in place. And for Stoke, how much longer can Nathan Jones cling on for? Only 5 wins in 35 league games for the Welshman. Can he hang on for any longer? And also talking about Derby, who've sacked their captain, Richard Keogh. What are the ramifications of that? Remember, if you want to get in touch with us here on the Premier League Fan Show, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We're going to be talking about the Rugby World Cup in just a few moments' time, but one of the big news stories that broke yesterday was the news that Derby have announced that they have sacked captain Richard Keogh for gross misconduct. Obviously, he was involved in that crash that also involved a number of other Derby players, including Mason Bennett and Tom Lawrence. Richard Keogh himself sustained knee ligament damage and has been ruled out for up to 15 months after, obviously, Tom Lawrence crashed into a lamppost last month. The Championship club said in a statement that they completed the disciplinary hearing regarding Richard Keogh in respect of his involvement in the events of Tuesday, 24th September, and that his contract had been terminated with immediate effect. This is just one of the quotes from that statement. As we have said from the outset, the club will not tolerate any of its players or staff behaving in a manner which puts themselves, their colleagues and members of the general public at risk of injury or worse, all which brings the club into disrepute. Obviously, he still did have a contract until the end of June 2021, and he does have 14 days to appeal against the decision. For Mason Bennett and Tom Lawrence, they were fined 6 weeks' wages by the club. While Derby Magistrates Court ordered the players to carry out 180 hours of unpaid work, gave them a 12-month community order and banned them for driving for 2 years. Now, this is very, very interesting, and the questions for me that come up from this, obviously Keogh has made 356 appearances for the Rams, is the big questions that come to my mind. Number one, if he wasn't injured for the next 15 months, if he didn't have a severe injury, would they do the same thing? Number two, if he was their best player, would they still make the same decision? If he was absolutely integral, if it was a top Premier League club, and it was your best player, would you still make the same decision? And also, you have to question one of the big things they said. The club will not tolerate any of its players or staff behaving in a manner which puts themselves, their colleagues and members of the general public at risk or injury or worse, or which brings the club into disrepute. Now, Richard Keogh brings the club into disrepute. That is one thing that his involvement in this does. So by that, that is a reason for potentially sacking a player. However, what I don't get is that there's a sense of hypocrisy and a contradiction with Derby's punishment here, because you look at the other part of that, but behaving in a manner which puts themselves, their colleagues and members of the general public at risk of injury or worse. Mason Bennett and Tom Lawrence's actions were putting one of their teammates at risk. Richard Keogh could have very easily died in that car crash. And number two, because they were drink driving and over the limit, they could have caused damage, could have caused serious harm, could have killed potentially any members of the general public. So I don't get how you can sack one player who, yes, brings the club into disrepute, but wasn't putting the lives of anyone else at risk. And yet for Lawrence and Bennett, who are the two men at the wheel of cars over the limit, they were putting not just themselves and their colleagues, but also members of the public at risk. It's a very, very serious situation, this, and should be treated with real severity in terms of the punishments. But I don't get it from Derby. I don't get how you can sack Richard Keogh. Now, as a captain, he has a responsibility as kind of the figurehead of this of the playing staff. He is someone that people look up to, and therefore he has put themselves in this position where they were out longer than they were supposed to be, and not exactly having a glowing image of the club, because you are representing the club as well as yourself. So I completely agree that Richard Keogh hasn't covered himself in any glory in this. But I simply don't get how you can sack Richard Keogh and yet Bennett and Lawrence were fined 6 weeks' wages by the club but are still there. I think a bit of that is the fact that they weren't injured, the fact that they're probably more important players. Tom Lawrence obviously is in the Welsh squad, so an international. I just think there's a massive contradiction here and a hypocrisy from Derby County that you can sack, if you're going to sack your captain Richard Keogh for his part in this, I think you then have to sack Mason Bennett and Tom Lawrence. Obviously, it's easier said than done because sacking three players is a lot. But if you're going to sack one, and Richard Keogh is a significant part of this, and I'm not devaluing his role in this awful situation that could have potentially harmed people in the general public, could have potentially killed someone in obviously on the street, the pedestrians. But to sack one and then keep the other two, who are arguably even more at fault, perhaps share even more of the blame, I simply don't get that hypocrisy from Derby. If you've got any views on that, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Attention back to the Championship. We're going to talk about Luton and Stoke later in the hour, but we're going to be talking all things Blackburn after this.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon. Obviously, the Championship Fan Show is dedicated to all fans of those 24 Championship clubs every weekday afternoon between 2 and 3. So make sure you get in contact with us. We're going to be talking all things Blackburn now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Ryan Hildred for a Blackburn podcaster. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ryan. Last time out must have been so disappointing for you Blackburn fans. 2-0 up away at Preston. You must have been thinking, or maybe you weren't, oh, we're going to get something good from this game. Then a comeback from Preston to mean they won 3-2. How frustrating was it, or was there kind of always that fear that something like that might happen in the second half?
There's always the fear there because this is Blackburn Rovers after all, so we're tried and tested in losing leads and whatever, but no, extremely disappointing. I mean, we didn't go there very confident, Preston good at home, and to be 2-0 up after 12 minutes or whatever it was, you're thinking, wow, we're in dreamland here. And yeah, we played really well in the first half. But fair play to Alex Neil. He made a change after 30 minutes, brought on Jaden Stockley up front, and then slowly but surely they started winning more second balls, winning a few more things. But, you know, even after half time, you're thinking, right, let's just, you know, see if we can get to 60 minutes, still 2-0 up and try and protect it. But Christian Walton dropped an absolute clanger, let them back into the game, and instantly when it's 2-1, I think every Blackburn fan knew what was going to happen. And yeah, it's a bitter, bitter one to take. And what was disappointing was second half, we put up no fight in an attacking sense whatsoever. Don't think we had a shot on target. And yeah, just really collapsed in the end. So yeah, very, very disappointing.
Is it too simplistic, Ryan, to suggest that that's perhaps a sign of a bit of mental weakness, or is it a lack of confidence, or is it just simply the fact that, kind of no offence to Blackburn fans, but Preston are a good side and they're playing at home and they were going to kind of come back into the game at some point. So sometimes you just have to kind of take that a team is better than you and they're going to have periods where they are going to come into the game. And that was more of the reason why Blackburn didn't take anything from the game.
Yeah, I think it's a few of those things combined, what you said, actually. Yeah, Preston are a very good side, and especially at home. And they've got a lot of players in that attacking area that are quick and dynamic, so they can hurt you. So absolutely, Preston are a good side. Alex Neil's also a very proactive manager. And a couple of weeks before, you know, against Huddersfield at home, we got outthought by another proactive manager, which is Cowley. So I think Mowbray's coming unstuck against managers that are very proactive and will not hang about in terms of changes. And certainly last Saturday, he looked like a manager that he didn't know what to do once Jaden Stockley had come on. Yes, there's a mental weakness there as well. I think, as I said to you before on this show, that Mowbray has really not addressed our fundamental defensive issue. And without Daryl Lenihan in the side, who, you know, is our star centre back, I do think the defence can crumble at times. You know, we conceded 4 away at QPR and 3 last Saturday. You know, we're conceding a lot of goals on the road. And I think, yeah, fundamentally, there is a mental defensive weakness there, particularly when the chips are down and the home side are getting on top away from home.
It was interesting to read some of Tony Mowbray's comments after the game that he was frustrated that good performances aren't producing wins. Do you think that that's a fair reflection on some of the performances recently, that Blackburn have deserved more from games? Or do you think that's kind of too easy to say that, oh, well, we should be getting wins, it's just about converting them, and actually that there are bigger problems than just simply not getting results?
Yeah, it's not a view I share from Moby there. I don't think we've registered what you would class as a complete performance all season. We've had good halves, you know, maybe good 60 minutes, but we've not had the full 90 minutes where you think, wow, that was a fantastic performance. So I think on the basis of a half or on the basis of 60 minutes, Mowbray's comments are true. But I don't think we're coming away and thinking, do you know what? We've really absolutely deserved to win that game there. And yeah, the wins that we've had, things like Middlesbrough at home and Hull away, they're all good wins within their own rights, but they were not complete performances. And, you know, I think we've got what we've deserved in those games that we've drawn and lost.
Where are you at, Ryan, with Tony Mowbray? Because he took over at Blackburn in February of 2017. So it's 2.5, approaching 3 years in charge. Are you starting to lose a little bit of patience and wondering whether he is the right man, or are you still going to remain patient with him, thinking that, that he can get things done eventually?
First and foremost, he probably deserves patience for what he has achieved, and also just the fact he's, you know, a really nice man and what he's achieved off the pitch for us and sorting out some of the chaos. However, I am at a bit of a crossroads now, particularly with some of these last few performances and seeing managers and, you know, with full respect to Danny Cowley, you know, a young manager who's still learning his trade, seeing managers like that outthink him. I am a bit of a crossroads with Mowbray. I probably liken it a little bit to when Ranieri was sacked at Leicester. You know, he won the league with Leicester and they're not getting good results. And you're thinking, God, is this the right decision to get rid of him? So then when you're thinking, right, are we getting rid of the manager? Who comes in? There is only one name that I think I would accept at this stage, and that's Chris Hughton, who's obviously tried and tested in this division. He's available at the moment. If you offered him now, I'd probably take him. But if there's no one like that available, then absolutely. I think Mowbray deserves some patience. But the patience is wearing thin. And Saturday was a bit of a watershed moment for a lot of fans with the way that we went down in that defeat, and particularly the second half where we absolutely just crumbled. And we made one substitution in that game, and that was Danny Graham. Once we were 3-2 down, there was absolutely nothing done to counteract the threat that Preston posed.
Obviously, one of the things we've talked about over the last few weeks, Ryan, is about how the injuries are mounting up for Blackburn, in particular in defensive areas. Obviously, free agent signings are available, but Blackburn aren't able to sign anyone either on loan or permanently until January. Are you concerned that over these next few months with the defensive injury crisis at the moment at Rovers, that over the next couple of months you might not be able to find short-term fixes?
I think we should be able to find short-term fixes. Niambi's come back into the fold now at right back. He's not had a look in all season then because of the injuries. He's now back at right back. So he, in some respects, is like a new signing. Lenihan's due to return soon. So, you know, he's going to come back in and compete with Adarabayo and Derek Williams. And Amari Bell on his day on Saturday had a fairly decent game at left back. You know, he's all right. So if those 4 or 5 can stay fit, I think we've got enough to fudge through until Christmas. Any further injuries in that defence department, and we're putting square pegs in round holes in defence, and that will just exacerbate the problem. So if we get a bit of luck with injuries, or, you know, have no further bad luck with injuries, I think we've got enough to get to January. But yeah, any more, and it is a big concern, definitely. And I think we would need to look into that free agent market.
Looking ahead then to Blackburn's next game, it's at home against Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday. Obviously, Sheffield Wednesday have made a good start to the season, currently 5th. How big a challenge is that going to be on the weekend?
Yeah, massive. They're a big club in this division. They'll bring a lot of fans as well and make a good noise. And amongst a decent manager, he's got them playing. So players like Forestieri and Bannon, players like that, they cause us problems whenever we're coming against them week by week in the championship. So they've certainly got enough to hurt us. And we're going to be really licking our wounds after that Preston game and just the general form. So, yeah, we're certainly going into that game not feeling confident, that's for sure.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ryan. That was Ryan Hildred, Blackburn podcaster. Obviously, Tony Mowbray having to deal with a bit of an injury crisis, in particular at the back at the moment, and that would have been such a devastating defeat for Blackburn. You're 2-0 up going into second half. The Preston players were booed off at half-time by their home fans, and Blackburn thinking pretty good results coming their way, considering Preston are up into second in the championship at the moment, but things can turn around. And one of Ryan's biggest frustrations was Tony Mowbray's reluctance to make any substitutions. The only substitute they did make was Danny Graham coming on when they were 3-2 down, that perhaps not being proactive enough, that they were too reactive rather than being proactive. And a very disappointing one, that not only did Blackburn not win the game, they didn't even take a single point from the game. Up next, as I said, for Blackburn, Sheffield Wednesday at home this weekend and a trip to Leeds the Saturday after. So a couple of difficult games for Blackburn, especially with some of the defensive injuries they've got at the back. Blackburn currently 17th in the table on 15 points through the first 14 games. They're only 3 points above the relegation zone, but as the championship table has been, they're only 9 points off the playoff spots. It really truly is remarkable how weird and extraordinary the championship has been this season, more so than any other season. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp. Obviously, we're asking a question about Richard Keogh, who's been sacked by Derby for misconduct for his role in that crash. However, Mason Bennett and Tom Lawrence still at the club. If he wasn't injured for 15 months, would he still be sacked? And if he was one of their best players at the moment, would the club make the same decision? And why has he been sacked? And Mason Bennett and Tom Lawrence are still there. That number again, 0208 70 20 558, or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to talk about Stoke later in the hour, but up next, we'll be talking all things Luton.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558, or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking all things Luton now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Ross Lawson, LTFC journalist. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ross. Last weekend, it was a loss for Luton. They lost 2-1 away at Birmingham. Birmingham had taken the lead, then Luton got back into it, but a late goal inside the last 10 minutes denied Luton anything from the game. Was it a game that Luton deserved something from?
I don't think so, being brutally honest. I think we were second best for large parts of the game. Having said that, I think we were perhaps a little unfortunate, particularly getting back into the game to then not go on or hold out. But I think in terms of how the game panned out, Birmingham was sort of the stronger team for large portions of that. And yeah, as you said, another defeat and something we've got to look to bounce back from quite quickly.
It was intriguing to read some of the manager Graham Jones's comments. Just read a few of them out here. We're just getting to the stage of the season when just being positive about performances is not enough. I've said that to the players. We have to take points. We wanted to stay in it and we did. And then we gave a stupid set piece goal away, which was arguably a foul in the 82nd minute of the game. Sometimes those fine margins cost you. Is it getting to that point in the fans that it's all well and good saying, oh, but it was a good performance even though we didn't get the result? Ultimately, football is a results-driven business, and at some point, good performances have got to produce results, and you'd probably take boring 1-0 wins where you don't play particularly well, so long as it means 3 points.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that statement is pretty much the difference between playing in a league like League One and then the Championship. You might not play well and you might scrape the results, or you might have a good game. You might always guarantee a win when you're in the lower leagues. But it's just about scrapping those out now. We had a fantastic win a couple of weeks ago against Bristol City, which we were hoping to build on. It didn't quite materialise that way. But you're right, we've had quite a lot of encouraging performances in the season, right from game one, really, where we had the entertaining draw with Middlesbrough. but it is about getting the points on the board, and you do fear at one stage or another we will get to a period where we will have poor performances, and if we're not picking up points then we'll sort of kind of rue the chances we had when we were playing certainly better football. We have had some dodgy performances already, I can't lie about that, but when we are playing well, we need to make sure that counts and try and at least get a few more points on the board. Having said that, I think we're okay currently. We're not in too bad a shape. It's just making sure we keep points ticking over and picking up where we can. You never expect to get anything at a place like Birmingham or at Fulham where we were in the midweek before. But come the end of the season, you'll be looking at moments where you think, could we have got a point there and things like that, just to keep things ticking over and making sure we stay up.
Graham Jones also did say, though, that he believes in his players. He says their character is outstanding. There are 18 players in that dressing room and everybody is contributing. Do you think, though, that there's a point, you mentioned the difference between the Championship and League One, and those fine margins highlights that difference between the two leagues, but that there's surely kind of that confidence, that belief as a team, or the mentality of a team can only take you so far. Talent has also got to come into it. So is there a concern that Luton might not have the quality in their squad to stay in this league?
I think we've got the quality needed to not be one of the three worst teams in the division. However, having said that, I would want to look in January and perhaps add to the squad already. We've got a sort of a strong 18 and even a couple of players beyond that who are not quite getting the recognition they perhaps would have done last year. But there's no such thing as being able to just sort of sit on your laurels and hope for the best with the team. We'll need to sort of keep looking, keep being clever with our signings. We've done quite well in the loan market again over the summer, and just sort of keep topping up the players when we're going to have people missing through injury. We already have had that at the start of the season. We're going to have more people coming back as well, people like Glenn Ray, who haven't featured at all for us this season, who can really add something to the squad. But it will be a case of making sure that where other teams are spending 10, 15 million on players in January, that we're not being completely left behind, and that we can kind of pick up a bit cleverer, even if not financially equal, signings in there as well.
I wanted to get a couple of questions in, Ross, about the potential new stadium. A slight problem for Luton is that a shopping centre owner is taking legal action to try and halt plans crucial to the development of the new ground at Newlands Park. Is the indication that this won't be a problem, or are there serious concerns that this might actually derail Luton's new stadium?
I think it's a roadblock, certainly, but I don't think it's something currently that's terminal for the project. I think it's just something that's going to sort of stand in our way temporarily, but once reason comes to light, and it's not just for the football ground that there's such a strong backing for the new development, it's for the town as a whole as well. Luton as a place needs some regeneration in it, so it's not just giving a new football stadium for the fans, but also the area a much-needed spruce up as well. So I think that's where the benefits of the new stadium and the new facilities around that as well will really shine through when it comes to bids and proposals and getting it over the line.
If Luton do make the move to this new stadium, which is supposedly a 23,000 capacity stadium, what will be your views on leaving Kenilworth Road? Luton, I believe, have played there since 1905, but even though there's a huge amount of history, there is a big difference in terms of the capacity. Kenilworth Road, I think, is just over 10,000. This stadium's over 20,000. So what would be your personal view if Luton do make this move? Will you be thinking, yes, obviously economically for the club, it's a great thing and it's a massive difference being able to potentially bring in double the number of people that normally go? Or are you of the opinion, actually, kind of for the fans, this isn't the greatest move because of all the memories you've had at Kenilworth Road?
I think it's sad, first of all, to leave such a what has also become a pretty iconic stadium in English football. You know, you always hear the stories of fans in the away end going through the garden to get to their seats, and there is something about that character and that level in football of where you need places where you feel something in them as such. But having said that, I think we're definitely sort of ready to move. It's been 114 years, as you said, that we've been there, and now is the time to kind of to have a fresh approach. We have 10,000 in pretty much every week when we play, but there's fans sort of queuing and waiting to get tickets. The key for me as a fan would be making sure that, you know, just because the capacity is 20,000 and we've doubled it up, and making sure we fill it as well. There's no point having that many if you're only having 15,000 or so fans in there. We want to really make it a home fortress again. But yeah, so it will be sad to sort of move on, but the time really is right, and it's exciting to have a new ground hopefully coming not too far in the future.
Before we switch back our attention to matters on the field, what's your view on modern stadia? Because we've had this debate here on Love Sport quite a lot over the last few months about whether it's cracked up to be moving into a new stadium, a new plush modern stadium, whether, yes, economically it might help, but whether it actually takes a club forward. Do you think that this potential move does potentially elevate Luton? It takes them to the next level, and it means that they can compete with some of the bigger teams in the Championship? Or is there that worry that, yes, ideally this is what you want, but it doesn't necessarily always pan out exactly how you would expect it to?
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned previously, I think it's much needed, not just for the football club, but for the town itself, which is always something massively to consider. It's a very sort of run-down place in certain areas of the town, and that really needs it. But you are right, there is a fear that the grass isn't always greener on another football pitch. You've got to make sure that Luton has such character with its fans, with its ground, and it's making sure that, you know, while you are going to somewhere that's going to be new and all the modern facilities, that you do keep the aura of what Luton Town's all about. And I'm not advocating having people going through someone else's gardens to get to the away end anymore, but just making sure that you've got something that makes it memorable for fans, and that's both home and away fans. You think, yeah, I want to go to Luton, I want to go to be watching this team. New facilities and a better ground, I think, certainly going to help things on the pitch, but it's making sure that we keep that identity as a club as well, and making sure that, you know, people know who we are and what we're about, and sticking true to our values as a football club.
And just finally then, Ross, switching our attention back then to matters on the field. On Saturday, it's a home game for Luton, 3 o'clock kickoff against Nottingham Forest, who a couple of weeks ago were right up there in the top two, level on points with West Brom. They've had a couple of defeats, a postponed game due to a waterlogged pitch, which has dropped them down to 10th. Obviously, in a home game, any team prides themselves on their home form, but how confident are you that Luton can get all 3 points on the weekend?
Yeah, I think we've really got to pride ourselves on getting those points at home. You know, we've had a couple of tough away trips, so we haven't got anything. But yeah, in the last home game, we had a fantastic performance against a Bristol City side who I thought were going to be sort of right level winners. We beat them 3-0. And again, it's a strong Championship team we're up against, and it's going to be a really tough test for us. We have to go in there confident. We have to sort of believe in ourselves and as a team, and that we can. Especially if we get our home form right, that's going to be a massive part of the season, and believe that, you know, we shouldn't be frightened of any team who comes to us. We've battled and we've fought against every team who's been there. We've been unfortunate, as we've said, not to get all the results, but I think there's no team in that division who we should be fearing are entitled to come to us and get the points, and Nottingham Forest will be no different. Well, if we prepare well, I know there's obviously Forest having their game missed. I don't know how that affects them, their preparations and mentally as well. We've really got to make sure we're sharp and we're going for every ball, and that's going to be the key on Saturday.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ross. That was Ross Lawson at LTFC Journo talking about Luton's loss last weekend to Birmingham. Also, this new 23,000-seater stadium at Newlands Park that has got a little bit of opposition, so maybe a few more obstacles for Luton to overcome. But Ross was emphasising how important it is, not just for the club, financially being able to attract or bring in through the gates more than double the number of people that currently come in. And for a club like Luton, obviously, the Premier League is slightly different because you've got so much TV money that kind of completely overrules the people coming in on a weekly basis. And that's why kind of fans are kind of semi-disregarded at the stadium because of the finance that comes in from TV. But in the Championship, because there aren't as many games on live and there isn't as much money in the TV rights deal, being able to potentially double the number of people coming into the stadium. Obviously, it's no guarantee that 23,000 are necessarily going to come in, but you'd imagine that's something that Luton would have factored in. But not only is it important for the football club, it's important for the community. Ross was saying that Luton as an area is in need of regeneration, is in need of some money spent to update it. And so not only is there a football stadium being built, but obviously a whole host of things around the stadium, a new hotel, new restaurants, that these types of things are massively important, and it doesn't just help the football club, it helps the area as well, and that's what Luton are hoping to do, and they'll be hoping to get that planning permission over the line and hopefully get on with creating and building that stadium. Obviously, it'll be emotional for Luton fans to leave Kenilworth Road if they do, considering they've been playing there since 1905, 114 years of history there, but potentially a new future awaits Luton Town. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We want to hear your views on Richard Keogh. Did Derby make the right decision as their captain? Was he the one that should take the brunt of the blame? If he wasn't injured for a long, long time, would he still get the sack? If he was their best player at the moment, would the club make the same decision? And why have they decided that Richard Keogh is the fall guy for us and Mason Bennett and Tom Lawrence, although they have been punished, don't find themselves out of a job and are still playing for Derby County? Make sure you get in touch with us this afternoon. Our number again, 0208 70 20 558. We're going to be talking all things Stoke soon. How has Nathan Jones still hung on to his job? 5 wins in 35 league games for the Welshman. We'll be talking all things Stoke after this.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. If you want to share your views, as I said, we're asking the question about Richard Keogh. Were Derby right to sack their captain for his role in that car crash? If he wasn't injured, would he still be sacked? If he was their best player at the moment, would he be sacked? And why have they potentially treated Mason Bennett and Tom Lawrence differently to their captain, Richard Keogh? That number again, 0208 70 20 558. We're going to be talking all things Stoke now, and I'm delighted to say we're joined by Pete Smith, sports reporter for Stoke on Trent Live. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Pete. Last time out was a 2-0 loss away from home at Millwall last weekend against former manager Gary Rowett. Nathan Jones, the Stoke manager, described the performance as very poor, just that the Stoke were very, very poor in every area, out-battled, out-worked, out-thought. Is that a fair reflection of that game?
Unfortunately so, yeah. Nobody could say that Millwall didn't deserve their win. Unfortunately, Gary Rowett had Stoke sussed. You just said he was able to switch the play. He brought their right back into play as much as they could and got around Nathan Jones's diamond really far too easily. And unfortunately, that's largely been the story of the season.
When I see those comments, Pete, they are rather concerning. Now, when a team is just outplayed in terms of the quality on show, that you can be frustrated as a fan, but sometimes that happens. And also, if you're playing a better side, then that's just kind of natural that the talent's going to come through. But when Stoke fans read that and say that they were out-battled, they were out-worked, they were out-thought, surely that's the least that a fan can expect, is that their team will give 100%, that they'll show the energy, show the intensity. The talent may come up short and they may lose a game because they're simply not good enough. But that, for Stoke fans, must actually be the most concerning thing, is not necessarily just the loss, but actually the manner of it and in terms of some of the criticisms that the manager has of the players.
Yeah, I mean, it's the worst thing you can throw at a player, isn't it? That they've not put in the effort. And that's certainly what's being accused of them at the moment. I thought the interesting point, came from Stoke legend Denny Smith, who was watching the game on Saturday. And he was saying he didn't quite see that it was a lack of work rate, but rather that it was misplaced work. They were chasing the wrong balls and they were getting caught out of position. And it looked like at times that Mill had an extra man, and it was because they weren't working collectively as a team. They were leaving gaps because they were chasing balls that weren't theirs, and it looked like they weren't there because they're in the wrong position. So unfortunately, it's not using their brain rather than not using their legs, or perhaps it's a bit of both. But yeah, it was a really damning verdict. Whichever way you look at it, either they weren't playing well enough or they weren't trying hard enough, and probably it's a mixture of both.
Looking at some of the players that were in Stoke's 11, do you think some of them, not that they don't care at all, but they're not necessarily 100% motivated to be there? I'm thinking the likes of Bruno Martins, Indy, Badu and Dyer, that were bought for quite significant amounts of money that never really quite performed for Stoke as they had done at other clubs. They're now in the Championship. They've spent time away, come back. Is there the concern that there are some players in this Stoke squad that I wouldn't necessarily go so far as say they have no interest in being there, but there's a feeling that they might prefer to be elsewhere?
Well, I think, to be fair, in Badou and Dai's case, he's playing to put himself in the shop window. It was pretty obvious during the summer that he saw his future elsewhere, but when no suitors came with the right money to bid to Stoke, he's buckled down and he's worked quite hard. But collectively, they're not performing as a team, whether it's the case that there are individuals who are looking out for themselves, that might be one issue. I'd certainly suggest that there are players who are at the club at the moment who don't want to be there. But for most of the part, it's players who aren't in the team. There are 37 senior players on Stoke's books at the moment, whether they're here on loan or they're out on loan somewhere else. But yeah, 37 players with first team experience, and that's just too many. And Nathan Jones can't even start to keep that many players happy. So he's got a juggling act before he even names a team on a Saturday. And at the moment, it's not going his way at all.
It's also been an interesting time for Jack Butland. You think back a couple of years, he was arguably potentially England's number one. That maybe the preference for Southgate originally was Butland over Pickford. He's gone through a very really, really, really poor time. Maybe priced out of a move. He's now lost his place in the Stoke starting 11 to Adam Federici. Where is Jack Butland at with his career, and where does he go from here? Because he's now not in the starting 11, so he doesn't necessarily have the opportunity to work his way back and work his way back into some form because he's not playing. So where realistically does Jack Butland go from here? And how sorry do you feel for him? Because he's made mistakes, but he's not made them deliberately. He's not intended to make these mistakes, and it's just been a really tough time for him.
No, that's a fair point, but at the same time, I think even he himself would say that he deserved to be dropped when he was, because it was almost every game he was dropping a clanger at the start of the season. And he deserves to be on the bench at the moment. Adam Federici has come in and not made anywhere near the same number of mistakes. I do really feel sorry for Butland, though, because, like you say, in 2015 it was, 2016 he was flying. He was the Stokes Player of the Year, and then he got a really awkward injury when he was on England duty in Germany. And ever since then, it's gone to pot. He came back on the eve of the next season and then suffered another injury. His injury was misdiagnosed, so he missed the best part of the next season. Then he came into a team which had an awful defence under Mark Hughes, and they were conceding goals left, right and centre. And that was Jack Butland's story, really. He was the fall guy behind an awfully organised defence, which kept making mistakes. And it got worse for him in the Championship. Last year, he did do OK for Stoke. He kept them in a few games. And everyone thought that in the summer he was going to move on to the Premier League. Nothing happened. Whether his asking price was too much, who knows, but his asking price has fallen through the floor now. He's got 1 year left on his contract by next summer. It just based on form, his valuation has plummeted. And who's going to want him? I can't see there being many interested parties in the Premier League at the moment, but he would need to get out of Stoke just because he's got so much baggage here at the moment. But where does the answer lie? Your guess is as good as mine. Whether it's abroad or a loan move to somewhere else, just to try and clear his head and try and build his reputation up again.
After just 5 wins then in 35 league games, are you surprised Nathan Jones is still in the job, or do you think that Stoke's owners are in it for the long haul and for the next few months at least, he's guaranteed to stay in the job?
Well, at the moment, everyone would be surprised if he's got months left at Stoke City. It seems like he's on borrowed time. I think he admits himself that at any other club, he'd have already been saying his goodbyes. And in fact, at Stoke, we think he said goodbyes a couple of times. And yet he's still here. He's survived. He keeps pointing to situations behind the scene, which he says he's improved. He reckons he's improved the environment day to day. But the proof has got to be in the pudding, and the pudding is not going very well at the moment. It's 2 wins so far in the league this season, 14 games in. They're getting there's a huge gap opening up to the survival, let alone the top half or the top six, which is where Stoke should be. And if he doesn't get results in the next couple of games, there's going to be huge pressure on him. And the attention will turn to the owners and why they're not making the big decision.
And just finally, a quick one then for you, Pete. Next up, tabletoppers West Brom on Monday night. Can Stoke take any inspiration from Barnsley's performance where they drew 2-2 at West Brom a few weeks ago?
Stoke can take inspiration from their own performances against Swansea and Fulham, who were playing against Stoke as huge favourites, and Stoke ended up on the winning side. They're the only two wins that they've got this season. Stoke have got it in them, but we aren't seeing it anywhere near enough. Who knows on the night? Either way, we could probably speak next Tuesday. Nathan Judge will still be under pressure, regardless of what's happened on Monday.
Thank you very much for talking to us this afternoon, Pete. That was Pete Smith, sports reporter for Stoke on Trent Live. It does feel like, as Pete mentioned, Nathan Jones is very much on borrowed time. 5 wins in 35 league games is not exactly a particularly good record. A pretty tough game coming up on Monday night against table toppers West Brom. But as I said, I mean, that result, Barnsley drawing 2-2 away at West Brom, perfectly sums up the Championship, how wacky and crazy it's been this season. There is no way that anyone could have predicted that the side at the bottom of the table, away at the side at the top of the table, would go and get a point and potentially nearly win that game as well, having been 2-0 up. So it is just crazy and wacky. And as we look ahead to the Championship weekend, more tomorrow, if you're trying to predict the Championship, I'd give up. You've got absolutely no chance of being able to predict what's going to happen in this Championship weekend. But maybe that's the beauty of it this season. We have absolutely no idea what's going to happen next in the Championship. And that means the Championship Fan Show always has something to talk about.
This is Love Sport.